It's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, yes, yes. Muhammad is away. He will be back soon. As a matter of fact, I've talked to him a couple times recently. You know what? If y'all got some questions for Muhammad, man, hit me in the DMs. You know what I mean? Let me know, and then maybe we get him on the mic or we get him back. You know what I'm saying? Like, because when I do talk to him, you know, he got takes and opinions. So, you know, we're gonna build some things on the eventual return. But anyway, y'all let me know. Hit me in the thing. But, you know, right in this moment, it's you and I, you know. And how y'all doing? How you feeling? Okay. Really? All right. Well, that's deep. That's deep. And I'm glad you opened up about that. We could talk about that at another time. But, you know, I appreciate the vulnerability. You got to talk more about vulnerability, huh? Let's be vulnerable. Let's open up. Let's, you know what I mean? Let's trust each other. I'm trying to do that. I just, as a matter of fact, I'm just coming from shooting something downtown and shooting with people I know, good friends of mine, and you know, and it's always weird with people. When I work with people, I'm always like, you know, I get weird about it. Like, I hope y'all put the funny shit out. I don't know if that, you know, but I got to just leave it in their hands. I got to trust it because I already trust the creative relationship. You know what I mean? I trusted the opportunity. It is what it is. At this point, it is what it is. So hopefully it comes out cool. I was in Washington Square Park shooting some man on the street with my people. And it should be coming out soon. But let me tell you, bro. Washington Square Park, it's like Washington Square Park Studios. Everybody's shooting content. You can't go 10 feet without somebody with a live mic and a camera and maybe a tripod. Everybody is out there getting to it. This little content ecosystem has gone well beyond critical mass. I don't know what's cracking, but I mean, I've seen people set up put a mic, attach it to a soda can. I seen a cat in a reclining chair answering questions. It was all over the place. I seen my man, the one cat, I'm sure you seen him on the internet, and I hate that I don't know his name, this rapper, this white dude, like he said, yo, he'll ask three people for a word, and then he just start freestyling, and you know, it's a thing that people go crazy. So there was all of that. It's funny, man. This is the new studio system. TV, it ain't what it used to be. You got to follow this attention economy if you're trying to make some bread. So it's always interesting to see it in action, you know, see the process of it all, man. But it's either you filming somebody or you being filmed. Washington Square Park has always been, you know, lively and about entertainment and hustle and all of that for as long as I can remember. It's always been like a meeting ground, obviously, with NYU being right there. It's right there in the heart of the village. It's just like a place where people converge of all types and intermingle. And it's funny, my homie, he was like, yo, you remember Tick and Tack? And I was like, yes, I do. It's always good when, you know, sometimes, you know, as you get older, you hope sometimes as you get older, like some of the stuff that you remember, depending on the circles you're around, other people might not hold those same memories. So they damn near dance off into the ether, you know? So every so often it's cool if somebody reaffirms a memory you had, because I've been saying for a while, I might have asked somebody recently, yo, you remember Tick and Tack? And they were like, nah, what are you talking about? Tick and Tack were these two, like, street dancers that used to be down in Washington Square Park. Probably, like, early 2000s, late 90s, whatever. And it was, you know, they would do their whole little performance. You know what I'm saying? And they would draw up a crowd, get a crowd going. They probably do about 3 or 4 shows at least. They get a whole crowd going, big old crowd. And then they do a bunch of like, kind of like tumbling, kind of like Showtime, but like outside in the park, you know, like kind of the stuff that you would see people doing on the train, but with way more room. You know what I'm saying? Do that. And they got little jokes and, you know, it was a cool little performance, maybe like 10 minutes. And I always remember they'd be like, yo, you know what I'm saying? You know, I hope y'all enjoyed the performance. You know, if you wouldn't mind, would y'all please pay our manager? His name is Philip D. Bucket. And then he passed the bucket around. People put dollars and shit up in there. I was like, oh, look at that. You know, this is before I even started performing. So I was just like, look at that, like, wow. You know what I mean? Not that I wanted to perform in the park, but it was just like such a spectacle. He was like, wow, they get it. They doing it. I remember, I don't know if it was for an awards show or a video, but I remember Alicia Keys had them in something. I thought that was kind of fly. I was like, oh shit, look at Tick and Tack and made it. Shout out to Tick and Tack, wherever y'all at. I had a debate. Basically, we were going back and forth on, I don't think that the quote unquote big three, Drake, Kendrick, and J. Cole, now that it's been at least a year that things have passed and everybody's dropped an album since, I don't think that battle significantly affected either three of them, right? I think they're back to where they once were. Drake is doing his Drake thing, making records, a whole lot of records, you know what I mean? And some are hitting, some are doing what Drake songs do. Kendrick made GNX, went on tour with SZA, stadium tour with SZA. That was big. Won another Grammy. J. Cole just sold out 2 nights at the Barclays Center, dropped the Fall Off, blah, blah, blah. You know, like they all kind of thriving, right? My homie was like, you know, that whole big three thing. He says, ever since, you know, J. Cole kind of ducked the smoke of the battle, that he is not considered in the same tier as Drake and Kendrick anymore. There's no big three. It's just Drake and there's Kendrick and then whomever else, you know. First of all, I felt like that big three shit was just marketing. You know what I mean? It was a marketing thing that neither three of them really accepted. You know, it was just something to get the people talking, to kind of keep that, just kind of brand that cohort. I think that as time has passed, there's been a lot more people that have grown less frustrated with J. Cole's decision to chill on the battle, especially as long as he don't keep hinting at, you know, what I would have done. That's probably the only thing that's frustrating. But beyond that, a lot of people were like, you know what, that man protected his peace, you know, da 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 da. My homie kind of kept bringing up like a bunch of you know, sales and things of that nature, like sales metrics. He even called the Fall Off a flop. Now, I don't know. Fall Off is gold at the moment, and it's probably going to make platinum. But a flop is, I think that's a little much. I don't know. Y'all let me know. But then the other thought I had, too, is maybe I just don't pay attention anymore, or maybe I'm just kind of jaded and cynical about how streaming works. But I don't really look at numbers like that. I don't know if numbers really mean the same as what they used to be. And I feel like I listen more for impact. I gauge it by impact. Like, am I hearing this song out? Am I seeing the song online? Are people using it for reels and TikToks and things of that nature? That's like the new kind of, you know, like the measure of impact, the measure of like it really, it's resonating. First week sales aren't what they once were. And then typically it peters off right after that. There's this thing where everybody's like, yo, drop the album. When's the album coming out? When's the album coming out? Yo, the album coming out. Come on, it's been all this time. Y'all ain't put the album out. Da-da-da-da-da. And then the album comes out. And then motherfuckers talk about it for about 72 hours. And then that's the end of the album cycle. You know, people might talk a little bit about it, but the all of that fever pitch excitement that you know, you were seeing weeks prior, you would thought it was sustained, but it don't. So when I look at artists like Frank Ocean or Rihanna and, you know, Beyonce, who may take her time, and you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't blame them. You know what it is, too? I'm not as, especially since I don't work within music, I'm not as consumed with the business of music anymore. And I don't know if any of y'all are. Any of y'all, I know people that do work in music still, so maybe you listen. But just in general, fans, have you noticed anything different in the way that music is received? Also, have you noticed anything? Do you agree that the big three is now just two and J. Cole's not in the same tier as Drake and Kendrick? Because I feel like what made people so upset with J. Cole not engaging in the battle was the fact that lyrically we knew he was on par with the other two, so it would have made it even more competitive. And I'm not even a J. Cole fan, but I could see that. Do you think that there is no more big? First of all, I never really prescribed to the whole big three, but do you think that J. Cole is not in the tier with Drake and Kendrick anymore? Also, do you think that numbers really matter? Do people still talk about numbers like they once did back in the day? Let me know. Still reading that Fab Five Freddy book. I finished the Mara Brock Akil book. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. It was good writing because there's moments when you kind of like, some of the characters could kind of get on your nerves. That's good writing. When you're like, come on, Ma, what are you talking about? What you doing here? That, you bugging. Just started the Rick Ross book. He just put out a book where he's talking about how to get out of a creative rut. It's kind of interesting that, you know, that even Rick Ross would be that, I guess, transparent about it, you know. And that's somebody else they just saying flopped recently. You know, it's tough out here, man. It's tough for a lot of, it's tough in so many sectors. But I'm curious to read what this book is. Because I only read maybe about a chapter so far. Sometimes Rick Ross could be on some other shit. Not delusional, but like over the top. This so far, I'm only two chapters in because it could change. This so far feels very like self-aware. Like way more self-aware and like transparent than I'm typically used to getting from Ross. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there's still a lot of posturing in it too, because, you know, it's Ross. You know what I'm saying? At this point, it's kind of like shtick. I look at it as shtick. I don't believe, you know. Last week, I got off the joint. I meant to talk about, I saw two movies last week that I wanted to talk about. One I saw in the theater. One I saw on DVD. We'll go DVD first. Old school. Yeah, DVD. Old school. I saw Round Midnight. Round Midnight is a movie that came out in 1986. It feels like it would have been a... I didn't realize it was just 1986 because it comes across like a lot older. But it came out 1986, directed by Bertrand Tavernier. I believe you pronounce his name. I don't know what else he's done, but it stars Dexter Gordon playing like this legendary trumpet player who might be a little past his prime, that's kind of making a return to the stage, and he's going out to Paris. Because as he says, there's no cold eyes in Paris. I think that's what he says. It's only warm eyes in Paris. I forget the line, but it was kind of slick. I wish I wrote it down somewhere. But, you know, Herbie Hancock's in it. Ron Carter's in it. Like, this real jazz legends that are in the movie. And Dexter Gordon is an actual, you know, real-life jazz legend. And he's acting as Dale Turner. That's the character's name, Dale Turner. And he does his thing. He does his thing. I didn't even realize it was Dexter Gordon. I knew it was a jazz musician, but I didn't realize it was Dexter Gordon because I actually listened to a couple Dexter Gordon projects, and I fuck with him. But I was like, yo, he carried this movie. He carried the movie. And at first, I really wasn't feeling it, you know, because I thought it was like a little cliche, you know what I'm saying? Like a little black genius. Meaning, and I don't want to spoil it too much. I mean, shit came out in 1986, but it felt a little cliche. The whole thing with a black genius needing to be like corralled by a white custodian who sees the greatness in him, you know, for fear of self-sabotage. You know what I mean? So in the beginning of it, it was a lot of that. It felt like it's one of these, you know, but as it got further and further along, I think that Dale one started to show his own agency. You know what I'm saying? He gave up some vices and he started to kind of take control of his life. And then you started to see the depth of his life and what he goes through and how big his life is. You know what I'm saying? And you know, beyond that, they got some dope shots of, like, you know, Paris and New York. And those are both two very photogenic cities, real moody, and it matches well with jazz, and like the shots were real saturated and the color balance, you know what I mean? Like it almost, I don't say like watercolor, but they knew what they were doing. Like it looked real good on the eyes. Then there's a cameo with Martin Scorsese, who was really good in this cameo. He's like real like an annoying jazz agent, but you forget that's Martin Scorsese. Like, he's killing the little cameo, the role. Like, he was convincing, you know? I was like, oh, shit, this is pretty good. Overall, I enjoyed it. I think it's worth checking out. I want to go listen to the soundtrack. Herbie Hancock did the soundtrack. I tend to fuck with Herbie Hancock, so I got to check that out. It made me think. I was reading something a while. It's somebody on Instagram, this one woman. I'm not sure her name. But she was just talking about, like, you know, like the absence of blackness in jazz on the business side. For jazz to be such a black musical genre that, like, on the business side, promoting clubs and things like that, there's not much black presence. And it was kind of like, well, why is that? You know? So it was just something to think about, you know. So that was cool. That was cool. Check it out. Check out Round Midnight if you get a chance. Or if you've seen it, you know, let me know what you thought. Now, in the theater last week, I went to go see The Invite. The Invite is the Olivia Wilde movie that was written by Rashida Jones and Will McCormack. And it stars Seth Rogen, Olivia Wilde, Penelope Cruz, and Edward Norton. And I enjoyed it. I really fucking enjoyed it. It was really good. It was funny. You know, my fear was it was going to be too cute. Like, especially in the beginning, I thought it was going to be a whole lot of, like, snappy rapport. You know what I mean? Like, repartee. You know, all of that little ha, 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 ha. Like, where it's just, you could just feel the writer's room in the scene. Like, nah, it was way more naturalistic than I expected it to be. And it had a flow. I saw somebody say, or maybe, I don't know who said it, but from what I understand, Olivia Wilde shot this movie chronologically, which is, you know, that don't often happen with directors. Sometimes they take a piece and they shoot this scene and this scene, but they said they shot it chronologically so you could kind of see, if you could feel him, like, warming up, you could feel him, like, getting even looser, you know what I'm saying? And it was almost shot like a play because it was really, for the most part, only in one location. I enjoyed it. I don't want to spoil what the premise is. You might know, but the premise was pretty good. Two different couples, Seth Rogen and Olivia Wilde play a couple, hosting Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton as a couple. And then, you know, they kicking it, they chopping it up. And the thing that I appreciated a lot with this, because I like all of them for the most part, you know, definitely, you know, I'm a Seth Rogen fan. I like Edward Norton, Olivia Wilde. I'm a big fan of Penelope Cruz, right? So, but the thing with Seth particularly, sometimes, you know, he does comedy so much, sometimes he could be, like, real bumbling, like, real goofy, you know what I'm saying? And, like, this had, like, an adult tone to it, you know? Like, it was adult content. So, tone-wise, if he'd have done that goofy shit, it could have probably taken me out the movie. But he was, like, real, he's like a grown-ass man. Like, he was angry, you know, he was like, snappy. You know what I mean? Like there was a dynamic that wasn't one note. You know, that's kind of what kills me with the studio. Like the studio cool, but I just his character is just a little too, like, I don't know, just goofy. You know what I mean? And this one he was measured, it was grounded. You know, it was good. So I thought it was dope. Penelope Cruz was ill. You know, I'm a big fan of Penelope Cruz. Penelope Cruz just looked good just off the sitting there, just the standing right there. You know what I mean? Just real sexy. Just she ain't even saying nothing. But then she can act. You know what I mean? So it's not just like a pretty face. Like she gonna do some acting. And I've watched her in like a lot of Pedro Almodovar films. Like they get together. They got quite a few. Like some of my joints, I forget, All About My Mother, Volver, like, you know. She's ill. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that shit. I definitely recommend it. If you can't get a good ticket to see The Odyssey, go see The Invite. Cause that's what I did. Not that I wanted to see The Odyssey anyway. That shit 3 hours. I'm not fucking with it. I still haven't seen Oppenheimer. I honestly don't even know. I'm not even hip to Christopher Nolan like that. To be honest with you, I see a lot of people. Christopher Nolan is one of the best directors of all time. I just read this whole, it was a New York magazine, one of these magazines where they ranked like 100 directors and he was number one. 100 directors like working today. And he was number one. And I see everybody falling all over themselves. And I'm not saying he's not deserving of any of it, but I'm just saying, like, I haven't watched enough Christopher Nolan movies to really have a handle on what makes him him. You know, a lot of the movies that he has done, I haven't seen. And a lot of them, I'm thinking about at least three. Oppenheimer, The Odyssey, and what is it? Did he do one of the Batmans? I think The Dark Knight or whatever. Like, they all long-ass films. When the movies are long as shit, listen. I don't really always have the attention span, you know? But let me know in the comments, what's your favorite Christopher Nolan movie? And where does he rank in your director top five? Do you have a director top five? So let me know in the comments, man, the Instagram comments. Let's start. Let's turn this shit into, like I said, a community, man. Let's do it. Let's do it. It's the conversation. It's not just a monologue. It ain't just me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's me right this second. But, you know, ultimately, I hope that this fucking talking into the void is somebody's listening. I know a couple people listen because some people check in, but I need more. I need more. I'm greedy. I want the motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? Come on now. Talk to me. Come out from the shadows. Stop lurking. I know what it is to lurk on the internet. Don't do that. Say something. It's a safe space. Till it ain't. Nah, it's a safe space. It's a safe space. Nah, for real. Come on through. Talk your shit. September 20th, Arlington Draft House. Do remember, Arlington Draft House, September 20th. Tickets on sale now, DamianLemon.com, ArlingtonDraftHouse.com. Yes, yes, yes. All right. All right, all right, all right. Let's get to it. Let's go to, where are we going? Westeros? Let's go to Westeros, man. House of the Dragon. I'm trying to be here for you. House of the Dragon, Season 3, Episode 7, The Dragon in Winter. They must have changed it because when I first watched it, that shit just said Episode 7. I was like, damn, this is crazy. This is a trend because it was Episode 7 and then Raising Kanan was like Episode 7, the penultimate episode. The penultimate means the last, the next to last. Opens up with Helena having a vision. You know, she's a seer. She's having a big vision. It's real bright. And then, like, she hears somebody calling her. Turns out it's Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra is talking to her. You know, Helena is just awake. She's like, yo, is my mom anywhere around? And your mom's still gone. She says, what's going on? What's your dream? She's, you know, talking about. She's having these dreams. Talk about dream fire. I guess that was her dragon. She says to Rhaenyra, she says she believes the dragons, they alter us. Rhaenyra is like, I don't know. She's like, you don't think it altered you? She's like, maybe. You know, Rhaenyra be all like on the fence and more so much second guessing. As much as I like her as a character, I'm losing a lot of patience with her because it's like, yo, come on. We seven episodes in. I'm at this point expecting you to step all into your power now. You know what I'm saying? Like, you the grace. You the queen. Like, start flexing. You still like real, you know, hapless. But anyway, so Rhaenyra's gets a little tight because she's like, look, man, we need to be on a better accord. You know, you're my sister. Even though you're my half sister, you know, like, listen, we family. You know what I mean? And you know what I'm saying? Like, we should be working together. As a matter of fact, why don't you tell me about some of these visions you've been having? These visions. What you see? What you seeing out there? And Elena's kind of like, you know, she ain't really telling her too much shit. So you could tell Rhaenyra is getting tight about that shit. Tell me what you see. And it cuts to a scene of Alicent and Aemon, you know, mother and son, jumping off, getting to it, kissing each other. First the kiss, I was like, all right, I mean, you know, the lip to lip kiss with parents. Look, however y'all feel, I don't even fight that fight. I ain't got no kids. Some I see it's a cultural thing. Some parents do it, whatever. Lip to lip, mouth kissing is, you know, it's not my thing. But look, I don't judge. They go from the, so I'm like, okay, and they start getting to it. Then they start getting, they in the bed. Alicent is riding Aemon. I'm like, oh shit, here we go. This is the House of Thrones. This is Game of Thrones shit. They on there. What do you call that shit? Family fucking. What is that shit called? Incest. Yes, incest. The game the whole family can play. They get on the incest shit. I'm like, yep, this is Game of Thrones. I guess it's about that time. They get into it. And the next thing you know, it turns out this was just a weird dream, you know, and it's actually Alice the witch, Aemon's lady, his witch lady. So he tossed her off. Oh, chill. He bugged out. He's spooked. She's a witch, so she used to motherfuckers being spooked. She's like, oh, you must have been thinking about fucking your moms. You know what I mean? Because I can read your dreams, nigga. I'm in your head. So he goes, he step outside. It looked like he stepped out. It looked like he put on some skinny jeans. I was like, yo, do they got jeans back then? He looked like he had some skinny jeans and one of them little torn, like, roll neck sweaters. He looked like he was modeling for John Varvatos. He had to go step outside. Then his mom's actually really showed up. Now, he's still spooked, like, oh, shit, but is this really her? I hope, you know, listen, I don't want none of that. Mom shows up with some dude, I guess an escort or whatever. Or one of her little friends. I don't know, escort or whatever. Shows up, says, yo, this is such and such. This is my son, Aemon. Aemon is such and such. He shake his hand, pull a dagger out. Wah! Stab him dead in his neck. Goop. Straight through his chin, all the way up through his head. Kills him. Boom. She like, damn, Aemon. You know what I mean? Come on now. He like, yo, did Alice come out, the witch? She's like, oh, your mom's is here. Let's go get something to eat, you know. So then we see them a little later. Like sitting at the table, and you could tell Allison and Alice, they don't really get along. I mean, one, I guess now there could be a battle for the loyalty. You know, Allison saved his life. I mean, not Allison. Alice saved Aemon's life. And Alicent, that's his mother, you know. And she's like, yo, how'd y'all meet? Like, oh, saved his life. Like, oh, okay. All right, bad. But you could tell, and Alice says it straight up, yo, I don't trust her. She brings evil spirits. You know what I'm saying? I'm not feeling, I don't trust her or whatever. So, you know, so there's that little push and pull. Lord Corlys, we thought he might have got hung, but they didn't. They didn't kill him. They got him with Hightower. Hightower got him at the table. I guess he's trying to, you know, get him to work for him or whatever, or kneel, you know. And Corlys ain't really feeling it. Corlys is not, you know, he's loyal to Rhaenyra. He's loyal to Rhaenyra. So, you know, Hightower's talking his shit. Corlys is a lord. He ain't feeling that shit. He jump up. He like, man, get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. Send me back to my cell. You know what I'm saying? Send me back to my cell. Put me in my cell. So they like, all right, bet, take him to a cell. And as he's walking off, Hightower pulls out a knife. It was like, hold on, one thing. So I thought, honestly, I thought he was going to cut his locks off. I thought he was going to do some shit like that just to fucking, you know, belittle him or whatever, you know. I thought they was going to keep him alive. Maybe still keep him alive, but looks like we'll find out later. He ain't cut his locks. Treasurer, I don't even know the treasurer's name. But basically, Rhaenyra's kind of threw him to the wolves with the people, saying, listen, all of that money y'all seeking, it's really on him. He's the one that balances the budget. So, you know, if you ain't getting what you need, talk to him because he's the reason, you know. So he basically is a scapegoat. He realizes he's a scapegoat. Rhaenyra don't really care. She's kind of just doing whatever she do. She's real no-huddle offense with this regime. You know, it's kind of coming along, but it ain't. At this meeting, I forget who comes in. What's Aelin's brother's name? I think it's the brother and the sister, Bella. Is it Bella and, what's my man's name, Alex or something like that? The other brother. But anyway, they come in and they like, yo, I don't know if they said they seen a Vhagar. They was talking about Vhagar, but then they were talking about Sheep Stealer, and Sheep Stealer has a new rider. And they like, she's like, you know, Rhaenyra's is like, wait a minute, because she think Daemon killed the rider and put the head, gave her the head. She's been under the impression of that. So she's kind of pissed off. She's walking with Mysaria. And Mysaria's been trying to tell her for the longest, listen, don't trust Daemon. That motherfucker be lying. And Mysaria, she be moving a little too familiar. Like, she thinks she in there. She really thinks she in there. As a matter of fact, she go to grab Rhaenyra, and it was like, whoa, don't touch the grace. You know what I'm saying? Fuck is you doing? Like, she was like, oh, my bad, I'm bugging. But listen, like, trust me, I think Daemon might be lying to you, you know, respectfully. So that's something for her to sit with. It's hard for her to really, you know, take that in, because that's her man, you know what I mean? And he's supposedly loyal to her, so she can't believe it. But even though you could tell, like, she don't fully trust him, but it's still disappointing, especially when, you know, everybody else seems to realize it, you know. We see that King Aegon and his crew, King Aegon is out there with, what's my man's name? Sir, I forget these guys' names. I forget, you know, he's out there with, I don't know, whatever homie's name is, damn dog, Laren, I don't know. He's out there with Larys, the cripple, and he's out there with the other guy. They three deep. It's not too many of them. They walking, they're trying to get back. He's trying to get the throne back, so they just on foot, trying to get the throne back. They see people running, you know, in the opposite direction. They like, yo, the Mootens are coming. Like, what? Yeah, the Mootens are coming. They basically looking for you, his man. And he's like, oh, shit. So they only three deep. There's like at least 100 Mootens. So Aegon is like, well, fuck it. I'm not running. I'm not retreating. I'm not going back. They want us dead there. They want us dead over here. I'm not dying unknown. I'm the king. They going to kill me. They're going to kill me as the king. We riding out. So they walking. Pardon the jumping around. I'm just looking at these notes. It'll get better with Raising Kanan. I swear to y'all, but I don't know half these people, man. Aemon, Daemon, Aegon, Rhaenyra, Corlys, Aelys. It's all these motherfuckers, man. It's a lot of people. Like I said, the Mootens are coming. King Aegon is like, yo, we going for it. His other man is like, yo, I'm down. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll die in valor. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll go out on my sword. And then Larys, he plays the cripple card just to step off. He like, listen, yo, I gotta go. He said, I'm a cripple, man. What do you want me to do? He said, unless the king would like me to, you know, hold it down. And the king was like, man, you right. You know what I mean? Go ahead. So he breaks out. And now they only two deep. It's 100 people, mind you. There's a lot of dragon action on this episode. We actually get a dragon fight. I don't even know the names of all of the dragons. I just know that they fly in, Rhaenyra and Daemon and all of them. They flying in and they wind up jumping Sheep Stealer. This is after Rhaena fucking breaks out on her own dragon. Like, she just runs away on some stupid shit. And her brother and her sister, they go grab her. You know, but when they grab her, that upsets Sheep Stealer. He like, yo, what's going on? And they start fighting. And Sheep Stealer was doing his thing for a minute. Then they jumped Sheep Stealer and they at least broke Sheep Stealer down. I don't know if they killed him. These dragons be looking so fucking irregular. You know how you go to the store, you know, like Burlington or TJ Maxx or the outlets, and you get irregular clothes sometimes, and one sleeve is longer than the other. These dragons be looking irregular than a motherfucker. Like, there's no standard to the dragon. They all look a little weird, all look misshapen. There's no uniform. There's no, like, now that's the top dragon. You know, it's just big-ass dragons. Maybe that's the best one, but some of them long-ass necks. Some of them just real spiky. It's crazy. Some lady comes to, I guess she wanted to meet with Rhaenyra, but she was out at the dragon fight. So Mysaria, she was there, I guess, holding it down, being Rhaenyra's proxy, as the girl peeped. So the girl's walking up. She's like, yo, you know, she's talking about the throne. Looks like a bunch of 100 sharp little cocks vying for attention. That should sound crazy. She pulls up and she's talking to Mysaria, talking about, yo, what's going on, man? The people out here, they starving. Like, what's up? I thought Rhaenyra was holding us down. She's like, yo, Rhaenyra is doing her best, but, you know, she's been overwhelmed. She's stressed out. Why don't you just tell me? She's like, what you mean? You the proxy now? You her second in command? She was like, well, I mean, you know, I take the information and I give it to her when she's not overwhelmed. I pay attention to her moods. This woman like, wait a minute, you a commoner like us. You know, now you done got around the throne and you think you somebody different? That's what you think? You know what I mean? Oh, you think you different. That's homegirl pulled that out. She was, Mysaria was like, all right, get security. Security, get up out of here, because you're starting to bring her back down to life. She's like, yo, she said, let me tell you something. She says, one thing you got to remember, you know, a whore will remain a whore. It was fucked up. I was like, damn, a whore will remain a whore. And Mysaria, you know, she's got a whore background. She's a whore. And Rhaenyra's be open over her, because later on, Mysaria's hits her with a little bit of whore talk. You know what I'm saying? It's like, nah. She was like, am I worthy? She was like, come on now. More now than ever. Lay down, girl. You know, women fall for whores too. All the black characters get neglected. There's a moment when you see Alex in the world coming in, I guess from battle or something like that. And somebody's like, yo, delivery. They give him a little box. They say, yo, this is for you. He opens the box and it's fucking his father's finger with the damn ring on it. He's like, oh. So did they kill the father or is he being tortured or whatever? But either way, Hightower sent a message to his son. We'll see what happens with that. Helena had a dream. It looked like she had a baby boy. Then she had a big ass dragon. And it's funny because she said the dragons alter her. And that dragon was spitting fire. Like, it was a crazy dragon. And then it was like a whole nother, like, she was out in the meadow. I don't know if this is like her dream as to she had the boy and now they take over and she extinguishes everybody that's there. And, you know, I don't know if that was like an allusion to what could go on, but that's what's happening there. So the Mootens finally pull up on Aegon and his man. Damn, Seer? I forget his name, but he's somebody. Y'all know who he is. Tyr, one of them. Anyway, Aegon and his homie, they sitting there. They too deep. And here comes the Mootens. His man, whatever his name is, he pulls out his sword. He ready. He's like, fuck it, we're going to do it. Aegon looking a little nervous. And dude says, will you flee after all? And then Aegon's like, nah, fuck that. Aegon pulled out his sword. He was like, we will not surrender to this false queen. They start laughing and shit. And then Aegon is like, yo, I'm Aegon. I'm the real. I'm Aegon Targaryen. I'm the actual heir to the throne. I'm the real king. This, that, and the other thing. At first, it looked like they was like, oh, shit, this is Aegon? You know, I thought he was dead. Like, it looked like they were feeling him. But then as they started getting even more spooked, turns out old Sunfire pulled up. Sunfire, we thought Sunfire was dead. Aegon didn't. Sunfire was taking a deep nap. He was hibernating. Sunfire come up, pulls up, and then finally Aegon realized he got his big ass dragon. He's like, Drakkhardus! And they just burned the whole shit down. Ah! And the way, like, Aegon is delirious with glory, like, he feel like he back. Lastly, we see Hightower out there with one of the commoners, the guy that likes to get drunk, like, goes to the pubs and all of that. He got a penchant for the pub. He don't know how to stay his ass in the castle walls. He always got to go out with the people because that's where he from. He got to go back around the way. He got to let them know he on, you know. And Daemon punched him in the face. So I guess the people found out. So they sitting out there having a good ale. He's like, damn, it's a good ale. Because he could appreciate a good ale. He stay in the pub. He's like, nah, this ale, this an inside ale? This is a good inside ale. So he's sipping the ale. And he's like, yeah, man, I heard Daemon punched you in the face in front of all the people, man. I heard they kind of, basically, I heard they disrespecting you, you know? I know you want to be a lord, you know what I'm saying? I know they was trying to give you whatever little castle. I forget where the castle was. He was like, but what about this one? He was like, yo, I got you. He said, you want a dragon? He's like, yeah, man. He said, yeah, I get you a dragon. So basically, like, yo, I'm going to turn you. And he's like, yeah, as soon as you turn me, I'm about to go in on these people. So we'll see. Hightower tell the people whatever they want to hear. I don't trust Hightower either. But that's it. That's my House of Dragons recap. Hopefully y'all suffered through it. Hopefully you fuck with it. All right. Raising Kanan. Season 5, Episode 7. Penultimate means second to last. Duh. I like that. I like that. I don't know how to take that. I mean, it's informative, but if you knew, you might be like, come on now, I already knew. But it's also like, listen, we don't want to hear no crying, no belly aching. There's one episode left. We're not giving you 10 episodes. It's only 8 and we out of here. All right. So let me just set the record straight. Penultimate means second to last. That means this next one is the last episode. Get your affairs in order. You know, which is the theme here. Woo. Lot of shit happens. This one was a fucking doozy. Let's just go through it. You know what it is, but we're going to talk about it. So it opens up. Hafiz, he comes to visit Stefano, ready to kill Rock. You know, Stefano's like, look, man, I totally understand. You know, God bless, you know, you and your family. It's hard. This is terrible. But let me handle Rock. Let me do this. You just let me take that off your plate. You know what I mean? I know you're upset. I know you killed your homie. Let me do that. Hafiz accepts. A little too easy, in my opinion. She just killed your homie like 2 days ago, and you already ready to just offload the revenge to another guy? I ain't like that. That was corny. Rock and Marvin meet with Flossie in Central Park. Man, I liked Flossie throughout this whole run. She was good, man. She was good. I thought Flossie was going to do some bullshit at some point throughout, but she kept it 100 throughout the whole shit. So she pulls up on Rock and Marvin, and she hits him with some, you know, some quick pleasantries. You know, who couldn't live in New York but gets right to it? You know, your son broke into my apartment last night. You know what I mean? Tells her, listen, you know, yo, so he told me about mixing the drugs that killed the judge. You know what I mean? You didn't tell me this. You know, Marvin, did you know? She, you know, Marvin doesn't say anything. She realizes that, you know, Marvin knew. She's disappointed about that shit, you know. So she says, listen, we're done. I told Pino we're not working together. It's over. Flossie and Marvin, they have a little breakup. You know, Flossie was like, I'm going to miss talking to you. Our conversations meant a lot. Marvin all like, me too. She kissed him on the cheek. Rock was salty. Rock was like, yo, we could move past this. She shushed her. She's like, listen, if it wasn't for your brother, you'd be dead already. So don't press your luck. And she just smoothed off. And Rock is like, you know, your girl just fucked her. She just fucked us. And Marvin's like, nah, we fucked ourselves. You know, Rock is bugging. Rock is bugging. We said this. Rock has been bugging for a while. Rock and Ed Kane, and they both tunnel vision. Rock lives and dies for this shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, this. What else is she going to do? What else does she want to do? She needs to continue to get money and move work. That is all she needs to do. She just needs to find a partner. That's it. Somebody supply me so I can get this shit going. I'm the best in the business. I don't understand what the fuck is the problem. Like, that is, that's all she sees. She's one track mind. But throughout this, you see people, well, really Marvin, kind of try to, like, level with her. You know, we'll get into that. We go to Kanan's house. We see Jarita is still figuring out she's been getting played for the second episode in a row. I guess she still kind of is reluctant to, like, call it off with Kanan. So Kanan kind of like, yo, I don't want to hear all that. Come on now. What we, you just talking now. Nobody want to hear all that you talking about. So Jarita finally is like, fuck you, Kanan. She about to step off and he's like, nah, fuck you, bitch. This shit was never real anyway. And then she leave. And then I'm like, damn, was it never real? Do you believe him? Or do you think he's a little hurt? Was Kanan a tender dick nigga? Or is he just a cold-blooded motherfucker? You let me know in the comments. Did he fall for Jarita? I mean, he's kissing all on the mouth and all of this other shit. You know, she'd be out there hustling that mouth. So they have their little breakup. Because she's mad that, you know, like, the Flossie thing didn't go well or whatever. I mean, she already quit. I mean, Flossie fired her. But I guess she figured that Kanan was either going to kill her or something. But now she's nervous that Flossie's going to want revenge. So, you know, she feels like her life is in danger. She's like, this shit was way more than I expected. And then Kanan's like, you know what? Just get out of here. It's over, you know. What else? So Rock is like, yo, we need to go down to that pawn shop, light that whole shit up, shoot everybody, kill Stefano, we got to kill Hafiz, everybody snaps and pop, everybody got to go. Marvin is like, everybody except Kanan, huh? And Rock is like, Kanan's still a kid. And, you know, Marvin is tired of this shit. He's like, look, man, you getting real choosy about who you kill. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could kill anybody else. You could kill, he's just a kid, but you killed Kanan's man that was on the bike. You know what I mean? Shit, all these other people that you killed that one little kid. Like, you kill kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's your son. I get it. And then Rock is like, you would do the same thing for Juke. So, fair point. You know what I mean? That's blood. I'm you know, that's my sore spot. You got it. But I do appreciate that Marvin is speaking up. He not just... I mean, he is going along and getting along. He's like, look, I'm locked in because we've gone beyond the point of no return. But I'm gonna tell you about yourself throughout this whole shit. You're bugging. I'm going to tell you you're bugging, but I'm your brother. You my sister. If we're going out in a blaze of glory or we're going out in a blaze of selective glory, then so be it. I think we've gone too far in the first place, but it is what it is. We on this motherfucking road together. Cops tried to get Garcia to speak bad about Baptiste in the wake of his death. Garcia held him down, gave him nothing. He said Baptiste was about as by the book as you get. Baptiste was a great cop and even better man. So they couldn't get him. He couldn't put nothing on. No smut on his name. Basically now that Flossie has stopped doing business. Flossie has stopped doing business. Pino has stopped doing business. Now the Thomases are on the table via snaps and pop. They tell him Breeze, we need you and Kanan to do the work. We need y'all to kill Marvin and Rock. Breeze is like, he's a little reluctant. He's like, that's kind of a big ask. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's his mom's and all of that. And they're like, well, look, we, you know, he gotta prove his dedication, gotta prove his loyalty. He's like, but that's his family. He's like, well, we his family. You know, so he's like, all right, we'll see what happens. Juke and Kanan, they meet at the pizza shop. Juke tells Kanan that Snaps and Pop were responsible for killing Famous. And she's like, yo, let's get it. You know, let's do it. You know, and then Kanan was like, But I thought I won shit. You know, that shit cut deep when she said that. Because that's his cousin and shit. You know, he told me I won about shit. He felt the way about that. And then he tried to, you know, I guess use street code to justify Fame being killed. You know, talking about if he's snitching, if he talking, then he deserved to die. Which is bullshit, because that's his man. You know, Juke wasn't feeling it. She was like, you know what? I bet I'm giving you the opportunity to get revenge for your best friend, and you fronting, you know what I mean? And Candace like, I ain't worried about niggas who's gone. And then Juke was like, niggas who's gone like Uncle Lou. And then Kanan get up, he leave. We see Rock go to meet Pino, try to salvage that relationship. Pino cut her off cold. He says, I'm through with you. You know, she's leaving. Tells his people, she's leaving. Get her out of here. Rock, she's like, anybody who's bet against me lost. He's like, all right, ma. He's like, you already owe the house and we coming to collect. The white boys with the pills, they get stopped. Feels like there's a Jay-Z reference where he says, you're going to need a warrant for that, you know. He's like, well, your man is already, he's getting stopped for a DUI, so that gives us carte blanche to check the car. They find the pills in the back of the car. Later on, they get locked up. They ready to sing to the cops and throw Breeze under the bus. Snaps and Pop, they find out this shit. And they tell Breeze, we told you not to hustle outside of what we was doing. Now this shit is fucking up the game because you might go to jail based on this shit and it could bleed into us. So now we got to cut ties. We're going to have to find a replacement. Breeze is like, you can't replace me. You know, this whole shit. So they do that. That's the Breeze and Snaps and Pop situation, right? I'm trying not to go beat by beat. Garcia tells Marvin and Juke the Amber case is probably not going to go his way. Basically be careful. You know what I'm saying? Like, they got a good ID on you. The two neighbors got an ID on you. It's bad. But Marvin, he's not really stressing it. He's like, man, I've been out running the cops my entire life. He said, I'm Carl Moses. Now, I don't know if Carl Moses was supposed to be Carl Lewis because I looked up Carl Moses and I never heard of him. Carl Lewis, I know. Breeze called Kanan out for not telling him about running up on Flossie. Also tells him about the plot to kill Marvin and Rock. He's telling him this is before, you know, Snaps and Pop fired him. So he's just relaying that message. He said, I told him I'd take Rock. I ain't trying to put you through all that. It's a lot to ask. I like that. Killing your moms is a lot to ask. So I figured you and your man's got beef already after he knocked you around like he did. And Kanan's like, you know, honestly, I got more beef with her than I do with my uncle, which is haunting. Kanan tells Breeze he knows that Snaps and Pop took out Famous. I don't know if Kanan should have said that. Kanan was like, he was upset in that moment. And I guess he was just kind of trying to prove, he was frustrated, trying to prove to Breeze. First of all, look, I'm not trying to prove myself to these old motherfuckers. I already know they're responsible for killing my homie, but I'm not even going to trip on that. I'm going to still do what I need to do just because I want to do it, not because I need to prove shit to anybody. I'm doing it because this is what needs to be done. Rock finds out she's under investigation for international money laundering. The feds offer her a deal if she could give some information on her dealings with Stefano and Pino. So she is not feeling that shit. She's blindsided by the whole thing. I figured something was going to happen by that buyer. Something about that buyer just seemed too easy breezy. That something seemed like so. Turns out he's laundering money and then he got found out, or either the broker got found out. Either one of them was like, yo, listen, this was all elaborate plan between the three of us. Rock is definitely involved. Rock is like, yo, I had no idea that this shit was going on. All I knew is he was trying to take that shit off my hands for more than I was asking for, and it just doesn't look good. I don't think Rock a snitch. I don't think so. I really don't think so, but who knows? We catch Marvin in the living room counting his guns. Juke walks in like, yo, what's going on? He's like, I just got to know what I got. You know what I mean? I see where I'm at. Juke kind of presses him a little bit about the Amber situation, like, what you gonna do? He's like, don't stress it. We're gonna be all right, you know. And Juke is like, yo, you know, I'm scared. You're the only person I got, you know, all of this shit. Whoever's on the score gets a little heavy-handed with the little sad music or whatever. But it's always good to see a jukebox and Marvin scene. Marvin, because per Rock, Rock was like, yo, pull up on that pawn shop and go get Kanan. Like, basically kidnap Kanan, bring him back to me. So Marvin gets a little crew. They go out there to the, I guess, Breeze's blocked pawn shop or whatever. They are outgunned. Damn near everybody in Marvin's crew gets killed except Marvin. He somehow gets away. Breeze is so happy. He is like, this is all he want to do is shoot his gun. We see Aisha pull up on Juke. Now, she's in the middle of, she was cleaning her gun. Is everybody cleaning their gun? She's cleaning her gun. Aisha pulls up. Juke tucks it in the couch. Aisha is fucking, like, she is going through it. She can't, you know, she, her life hasn't been the same ever since Jukebox left. She ain't eating. She, you know, it's, the shit is fucked up. I don't know. Juke be laying that labia down. But anyway, so boom, fucking Juke is, you know, Aisha's like, I want you back. I need you back. You know what I mean? I don't know what you're doing out here. Da-da-da-da. Jukebox, look, I already moved on. Aisha's like, man, get out of here with that shit. She goes to sit close to her. She sits on the gun. She pulls a gun out. She's like, what's this? This look like a gun, right? She's like, is it your gun? She says, it is. So then she's like, what are you going to do with that? You know, it just shows how green Aisha is. Juke is like, listen, you don't want to be with me. This is what comes with being with me. Get out of here. She's like, but listen, I can't. Whatever you're going to do, just know that I love you. And anything that bad happens to you is going to affect me, this, that, and the other thing. She's like, yo, go. So Aisha goes, then goes over to Kanan's house and basically tells Kanan, yo, Jukebox got a gun. I don't know what's going on. Kanan is like, I don't know what it is. Me and Jukebox aren't really speaking. You know, honestly, if she got a gun, she might be coming to kill me. Aisha's like, yo, that ain't even funny. He's like, yo, I ain't even mean it to be funny, but you got to go. Aisha's like, yo, the Thomases keep throwing me out. He's like, you still don't catch the hint. So Aisha's going. We see Snaps and Pop. They going to the park. This is where they meet with Breeze, the fire Breeze, but they going to the park. Jukebox is in the taxi behind them, following them. And after Snaps and Pop, fire Breeze, they walking through the little tunnel in the park. Jukebox pulls up on them. It's like, yo, y'all killed Famous. And, you know, they got the gun drawn on them. They're like, what are you talking about? They try to run a stall play. You know, they're like, yeah, this is Kanan's cousin. So he's like, yo, we ain't got nothing to do with Famous. Why would we do that? You know, and then they running like a little stall play. You could see Snaps using her, well, you could see Pop using her, I don't know. I think Pop is the woman, right? You see Pop using her purse to kind of hide Snaps' hand so he can grab the gun. But Juke is just quick. Boom. Catches both of them. Boom, boom. Shoots them. Then shoots both of them in the head. And then just smooths off. She just walks off. Takes the gun. Puts it in a, you know, a little Columbia jacket. And she's out of there. The thing about Jukebox, when Jukebox kills, she killed different than anybody. She got a little bit of her father in her. But, like, it's even colder. Marvin gonna kill you, talk some shit. Juke is so, made such a resolution. It's over by the time, like, she ain't got nothing more to say. It's done deal. Boom, you're dead. It's over. Shebang, you're dead. So she walks off. Later on, you see her go to Rock's house, goes to tell Rock, listen, I know that you didn't kill Famous. I just want to let you know that. Marvin writes a note for Jukebox and leaves a suitcase full of money for her. He takes it to the church to give it to the pastor just in case something happens to him. The people have already created a note that's floating around the internet. Because when he writes the note, he just folds it up and puts it in the suitcase. You don't see the note. But somebody has, I don't know if it's AI or whatever, or maybe it's a screen grab from next week or whatever. I haven't even read the note. But I might post it on the stories just so you can see it or whatever. But it's like, all right. I don't know. It's fan fiction, which I enjoy. You know, the Power Universe has a lot of fan fiction, a lot of, you know, a lot of speculation. That's what powers this shit. Anyway, so he goes to the church. He tells the pastor, listen, this is for my daughter. If anything should happen to me, and don't let nothing happen to that money, because something could happen to you. But here, I'm going to break you off with some money for, you know, facilitating this whole situation. The pastor says, I'll take that for tithing. Marvin's like, whatever you want to call it. The pastor's like, well, let me go next door, put it in the parsonage for safekeeping, and you stay here. I want to talk to you. So Marvin's in there, you know, he's chilling. He's in the, you know, in his, I guess his safe space. He's been in the church for a while, having these questions, been kind of grappling with what is life, you know? So while he's sitting there, Kanan comes in. And he's like, you know, Marvin don't even turn his head. He's like, damn, pastor, you fast. Kanan walks past him. He realizes, oh, shit, it's Kanan, right? So then he sees Kanan pull out a gun. He like, this underhanded nigga robbing churches now? You know, he just kind of dismisses it, right? And then when Kanan's like, nah, and he turns around, he got the, you know, he got the gun on Marvin. The way Marvin processed the fact that Kanan came to kill him was great. He was like, oh, shit, for real? Like, real? Like, oh, okay, I guess this is what it is. And, you know, Marvin, at this point, Marvin has made his peace. I mean, he's been making this. He's been kind of getting his affairs in order for at least the last two episodes. You know, he left some money for Juke. He didn't really spoke his mind to Rock. He done beat Kanan's ass, you know, over the loot thing, you know, everything. He's introduced Juke to Amber. You know what I mean? When I'm gone, I want y'all to stay in touch. Like, he's tying up all of the loose ends. So he has a level of acceptance that is like, it's almost chilling. You know, he's just like, and Marvin, even when he's killing or about to be killed, he going to talk his shit. So he was like, he said, you know, this going to be with you for a while. He said, you're going to see me in your nightmares, you know. And then he tells him, you know, how hard it's going to be for him to get over it. But after a while, you know, you're so evil and so cold that you'll finally eventually get it. And then and Kanan's like, is that what happened to you? He was like, nah, I'm a little different. He said, you don't care about nobody. You only care about yourself. He talking shit, whatever, whatever. And he light a cigarette. And then he just say to Kanan, he said, yo, we doing this or what? And then, shit. Fucking Kanan shoots him three times to the chest. Boom, boom, boom. Marvin went out like a G. Shot three times to the chest. I hate the fact that he did the 2 Chainz dance. He did a little bit of the 2 Chainz from BMF dance. It's my only thing. I was like, but fucking Marvin, the end of Marvin. Kanan stepped over Marvin like Tyronn Lue and just moved off. And then the 50 narration comes in and says, if you didn't hate me before, you hate me now. And I don't give a fuck, nigga. Damn, that shit was crazy, man. Marvin, shit. Such an integral piece. I mean, it's only one episode left. Fuck. Is Rock dying? I saw a clip where Kanan on an old episode of Power, Kanan comes in to see Ghost and Tommy. He says, yo, I just came from seeing my mother. So that could either indicate that she's still alive, indicate maybe he went to the cemetery to visit her. Maybe she's in jail. Maybe she went to jail for the fucking that international money laundering thing. Who knows? Or maybe she dies. We'll see. I mean, Rock is spiraling. She out here meeting with everybody. She meeting with old enemies, connects that don't fuck with her no more. She ran up on Pernessa's house asking for Unique. Pernessa's moms was like, Pernessa and Kadeem, they left. Kadeem, leave it up to the moms-in-law to use the government name. But rest in peace, Marvin. Rest in peace, Marvin. Hell of a fucking season. Hell of a season for London Brown. He put his foot in this whole season. But I mean, just in general, hell of a character. Rest in peace, Lou. Hell of a character. We unlocked, I guess this is the turn, right? Like, we unlocked Jukebox, like the, you know, killer Jukebox. Even though she's killed before, like, this is killer Jukebox. We unlocked Killer Kanan. Like, this is a, you killed Marvin. Killed your uncle. You know, if you ain't like me now, you gonna hate me, you know? I got a couple questions, though. One is, what are the questions I got here? First of all, Kanan telling Breeze he knows that they took out his best friend. Kanan telling Breeze that he knows Snaps and Pop took out Famous. Does that, is that going to lead Breeze to believe that Kanan killed Snaps and Pop? That's one. Two, does Kanan know, I mean, Kanan should know that Juke killed Snaps and Pop based on the fact that she's the only person that had that information about, and she went to say, yo, let's go get it. And he was like, oh, you looking for an assist? She was like, I don't need an assist. So he probably already knows that. One, that's one. And then with Aisha coming over there. But then what made me think was, maybe not as I'm just recapping that, but I wonder if Kanan had found out that Snaps and Pop would, they had gotten killed, would he have been less likely to kill Marvin? You know what I mean? Because he killed Marvin before he found out about Snaps and Pop being dead. I wonder if Snaps and Pop being dead, there's no real reason to kill Marvin unless some other shit happened. But, like, I don't know. I'm curious to see how Rock deals with now Marvin being dead. I'm curious to see how Jukebox handles it. And I'm curious if Jukebox is going to suspect that it was Kanan. I don't know. 'Cause the thing is, in Power, Jukebox and Kanan are cool, somewhat cool, you know what I mean? So I'm just curious what happens. I'm curious if Jukebox is going to be in, what is it, Power Origins? If she's going to, they're going to move her over to that. I don't know, because I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like I would like to see some more Jukebox shit. But hell of a fucking episode. Hell of a loss. Rest in peace, Marvin, man. Pour out a little liquor. You know what I'm saying? What did y'all think? Let me know. Let me know in the comments what y'all think. Y'all got any speculation for this last episode? Do you think Rock dies? Do you think Rock survives? Whatever. Let me know. Let me know if you got, if you peeped anything that I ain't talk about. And, you know, yeah, this recap might have been a little clunkier than others, but I hope that you, you know, if you here listening now, thank you for listening. It's a long ass day. But we did it, y'all. We did it. We here. Listen, once again, September 20th, Arlington Draft House. September 20th, Sunday, September 20th, Arlington, Virginia, Arlington Draft House, DamianLemon.com. Tickets are still available, ArlingtonDraftHouse.com. Get them shits now. I'm trying to sell that motherfucker out. All right? All right, bet. And as always, tell a friend to tell a friend. And even an enemy to get in the conversation. I'm out. Conversation.